In our presentation, we focus mainly on the financial implications of the implementation of the political party funding bill when it is enacted and becomes an act. In our presentation, we also focus on a few policy issues that need to be addressed and the policy issues that are not addressed by the bill. So it's two parts: financial implications when the bill becomes an act, and also the policy issues that we feel need to be highlighted to the committee. I think our task is a bit easier because I think with the financial implications, we had engagements with the IEC, and we agreed on a phase-in approach. We agreed on the startup funding that need to be provided from the National Treasury side. And we also ensured that it was efficient. There will be efficient resources allocated for the implementation over the MTF period. Committee members, chairperson, we're also very mindful that the bill will expand the mandate of the IEC. It will expand the mandate because on the one side, the IEC need to ensure fair elections, and on the other side there's also additional responsibilities in terms of the bill that's imposed on the IEC. On slide one, the next slide, we just give a breakdown of the presentation, and as I said, we're focusing on the financial implications and the policy issues. The policy issues will be dealt with by my colleague. On the next slide, we're just trying to highlight in the presentation the purpose of the bill and what the main functions are. And we're very mindful that the purpose of the bill is to regulate public and private funding of political parties, to establish the management of, to establish the funds and the management of the funds, to fund the representative political parties adequately, to prohibit certain donations made directly to political parties, to regulate disclosure of donations, to determine the responsibilities of political parties in terms of funding received from the in terms of the bill, and also to provide for the duties and powers of the commission together with the political parties. So we're trying to highlight the main purpose of the bill and also looking at the main functions. In the main functions, we're just highlighting the distribution of the funds in terms of the act that is highlighted in the bill, monitoring and compliance that the bill is stipulating, record keeping and reporting, promotion and communications. And it's very clear that the bill make a provision of the responsibility of the commission, which is the IEC, and also the responsibilities of the political party. So there is clear guidance that the bill gives in terms of how the funds need to be administered, how the funds need to be dealt with in the political parties, and also in terms of disclosure and the audit process. On the next slide, we're just trying to highlight what is the main processes that need to be in place for the implementation to be successful. So we discussed with the IEC and we came to the conclusion that there should be a process map that basically map out the governance, administration, reporting and communication processes. The IEC should develop systems, policies and procedures that's aligned to the stipulations in the bill. And then it's important that the organizational structure of the unit administering the two funds, that is aligned to the policies, processes and systems. So the bill is going to have two funds. The one is the representative political party fund, and the other one is the multi-democracy fund. On slide 5, what we agreed with the IEC that we should follow the phased-in approach when it comes to the implementation of the bill. And with the phased-in approach, we have highlighted certain areas that need to be covered, and we've basically said that it should establish the fund, and there should be limited fundraising. So when we go through the bill, the multi-democracy fund relies a lot on private funding, so there should be limited fundraising. There should be the strategic appointments, and the bill make provision that there should be a CEO that's going to head the fund, and then the unit will also have four functional areas. We should also conclude the reporting regulations and systems, the reporting of the Commission to Parliament and disclosure after the auditing process. And there should be training and awareness of the new legislation. So we agreed that this is the main functions that should be implemented once we start with the phasing of the bill. On slide 6, we're just highlighting that we are recommending to the committee and also recommended to the other ad hoc committee that the fiscal should make 20 million available to fund the phase-in approach. And the fund should be administered in a unit in the IEC, and they should share, there should be a shared services model followed. So in terms of corporate services, they should be sharing between the IEC and the administration of the fund. In terms of the long-term funding of the administration of the two funds, we envisage that over the long term, the fund will become self-funding. There will be enough funding in the two funds that would that can be applied for the administration of the funds, and the bill make provision for it. On slide 7, we're just looking at the different funds that's currently in operation. So we're looking at the funds that have been established in terms of the bill, and also the funds in the provinces. But we will deal more with this when we deal with the policy issues to see how we can harmonize the funds in the provinces with the funds established in terms of the bill. And then on slide 8, I'm just highlighting the budget process. There's basically two processes, that the adjustment budget process. And the PFMA is very clear that what transactions would qualify for the adjustment budget process. And we also feel that with the funding of the implementation of the bill, that we should follow the IMTEC process, which are starting in a month's time. And in the IMTEC process, we basically look at the priorities set by government in terms of the mandate paper. Due to limited funding in the fiscus, we also look at prioritization and savings. So we are going to deal with the 20 million startup fund and also the funding over the MTF in the IMTEC process. On slide 9, I think it's some issues that we also need to consider as a committee. The audit cost in terms of auditing your smaller political parties is going to be additional costs for those parties, because to comply with the stipulations in the bill, there should be an audit process of the smaller parties. We're also very cognizant of the fact that there should be additional skills in the IEC that's important for the administration of the funds, and the skills required in terms of the bill is investment planning and management, investigations and enforcement, party funding and research, policy development and fundraising. So I think over the long term, we will have to allocate resources for the additional skills required for the implementation of the bill. I will ask you over to my colleague to deal with the policy issues.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. So there's a few issues that where we've identified the need for some policy and clarity. The aspects related to the interface between the PFMA, Public Finance Management Act, the bill, and the provisions of the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. So the IEC operates, the IEC is a constitutional institution scheduled in Schedule 1 of the PFMA, and of course it has to comply with all of the provisions of the Public Finance Management Act. And of course the bill makes provision, it talks about alignment with the Financial Management of Parliament and Provincial Legislatures Act. And what we're saying is that we just need to get greater clarity for the aspects that relate to the PFMA, because this funds will be managed by the IEC, which falls under the ambit of the PFMA. So we just need clarity on the interface on that side. I don't know if my colleague wants to say something on that. And then also there's a policy issue regarding PR, and of course in terms of the disclosure of private funding, there needs to be alignment with the legislation in terms of the disclosure of persons making donations over the threshold. So we need to make sure that the two legislations, in fact, the PR Act makes provision for that, and that there's alignment on that particular issue. One of the key issues that we need to deal with is harmonizing of the legislation for establishing funds in the provinces. That hasn't been addressed. So the provinces have political party funding as part of their legislation. We need to be sure that we harmonize this in some way, not possibly through this act, but the provinces themselves need to deal with that particular issue, repeal their acts, and make this this legislation then this bill the primary piece of legislation for which political party funding takes place. But of course, that is something that the committee must recommend to provinces to undertake a review of their legislation regarding political party funding. The bill in its current form does not provide for funding for smaller parties participating in local government elections, so that may be an issue. You would have independents that partake in local government elections. They don't form part of a bigger party, not represented at the national level or the provincial level, and of course that is something that we need to deal with here. But I think this bill basically deals with national and provincial, and we then of course need to also think about how we incorporate the local side. I think Salga made a presentation on that, and maybe we want to incorporate some of their issues in this particular aspect. Establishing of the fund as a separate entity to separate election activities from the administration of these funds. So I think we're saying that there needs to be a separate process in terms of how this independence that is seen between the IEC and the management of these, the administration of these particular funds. We're seeing, I think my colleague in one of the other slides talked about the administrative structure that would be put in place. We talked about the shared services process for alignment in this regard. We also talked about how these separate activities need to be managed and coordinated. So of course, there shouldn't be an overlap between one the real work of the IEC and the administration of this particular administration of these funds. Lastly, just a grammatical issue, but there's reference to the Auditing Professions Act, but in fact it should be the Professions Act. So that just needs to be clarified, and those are the key issues that we've identified. The addendums of the cost breakdown, I'll give over to my colleague. Maybe she can talk more about this. This is essentially the funding that we have identified.
Chairperson, honourable members, this is just sort of a breakdown of the cost of the 20 million that we're proposing for the first year, and then we grow the baseline in the two outer years, which will give us 95 million over the MTF. So the first year, it will be money that's going to be appropriated for the 1920 financial year. And then the two out years will just be indicative amounts. So it will also depend on the funding that the fund will be able to generate, if there is going to be enough funds that is going to be made available for the administration of the funds. But that is the funding that we recommend for the implementation of the administration of these funds over the MTF. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. I think that's the old presentation, isn't it? Okay. No, thank you very much for the presentation. Honorable members, I will just request that you take notes, and then any other issue you want to raise on the presentation, and then we'll deal with the questions for clarity and the comments immediately after the last presentation, like I indicated earlier on. So for now, we'll give to the IEC. I'm not sure whether it's going to be done by Dr. Mashinini, the presentation of the IEC. Who's going to vote? Okay. So we're giving over to the IEC to make the presentation. I think you can come very close to somewhere here in front, Mr. Mashinini. Please. Change the chairs. Okay. to sit very far. Okay, the floor is yours, Mr. Moshilini, and the collective. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson of the NZOP Ad Hoc Committee on Funding of the Political Parties. The Honourable Mr. Hangsto, Honourable Members of the Committee, on behalf of the Electoral Commission, allow me to thank you for inviting us to make this presentation on this bill on party political funding. I take the opportunity to introduce the team from the Electoral Commission. I am joined here by our Vice Chairperson, Mr. Terry Delaney, and with him as well our Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Reverend Mamabulo, as he's recently been ordained. And also we have with us our Acting Chief Financial Officer, Madam Devette. I think she's shy in coming forward. She's there with us, and together with Mr. Granelli, who's Senior Manager responsible in communication. I think, Esther, you can come and join us on this side, please. With respect to the details, our CEO will shortly take us through, honourable members, the details of the bill and the mechanics and the background to it and the processes. Those are the details for the CEO. But if you would allow me, I think one first is to make some brief remarks on our involvement as the Commission in the development of the bill and the inputs that informed the bill as it now sits before yourselves. Because I've been made to understand that throughout this period it has primarily been at the level of the National Assembly. And so one should then not assume a lot as far as the NCOP, because it is a separate organ of our parliament system. And honourable members, and through you, Chair, I think at the outset one wants to make this very clear that this is not an Electoral Commission sponsored bill. We as a constitutional institution, we are tasked in managing elections, and we have a key interest in all issues pertaining to the creation and conditions conducive to free and fair elections, as well as we are in the country a major institution that has a subject matter expert in a repository of information around this. So it was within this context that the Ad Hoc Committee requested of the National Assembly, requested and invited us to make
numerous representations in development of the bill and reaching the draft. And we as the Commission, we embrace and welcome that particular opportunity, and we took it very seriously to the extent that we continuously made sure we include the chairperson of our of the chairperson of our subcommittee in the Commission, which is the vice chairperson of the Electoral Commission and the chair of the EMC, our Electoral Management Committee, as well as our CEO and other members of the Commission throughout the process, together with the, our administration and technical team that we're working on this. It was at the policy, strategic level, as well as at the detail level. And we were grateful, therefore, then that we had the opportunity to make the members of Parliament who were developing and the bill aware of the issues and some of the concerns and some of the matters that they needed to factor and consider. And once more again, Chairperson, we're grateful that, that such an opportunity has been availed to us again. And in that process, we culminated in us also collaborating with the Treasury as the presentation before us has indicated, that we then subsequently evolved in working with the Treasury around this particular issue. And among those previous inputs, just to note a few, over the course of the development bill, this included for us in identifying what were the best practices internationally so that that should be factored in the development of this legislation and the regulation of the political party funding. And this includes providing, included providing the National Assembly ad hoc committee with various options as well about both the legislation and the oversight of the political party funding. Now, I think one would, honorable members, like to also indicate that with respect to our understanding of the party funding in globally is that there's no one size fit all. When it comes to regulating party funding, and most countries have adopted systems which best suit their unique circumstances, whether economic, political, governance, and otherwise. And so it was also inevitable that for South Africa, then the bill has emerged also as more or less a customized bill for the South African situation, and it may or still would still evolve over the period of time. And in this regard, we pointed out that also there were different approaches adopted around the world with regards to the agency that is tasked with implementing the legislation as well as ensuring compliance by political parties. And so some countries, this task of election management is the task of the election management bodies, similar to us as the Commission, with the responsibility of ensuring both conduct of the elections as well as the managing of the party funding and monitoring of the and monitoring the compliance. But others, our countries, you would find these two things are separated, where the entity and other agencies within the government would be assigned that task, e.g. the HA, the Auditor General, or any other suitable institution, or they create a specific institution for that purpose, separate for the, from the electoral management bodies. So there isn't a what you call a prescribed single formula in that respect. And for each one of those options, we did actually share with the honorable members then that there are pros and cons as well that have to be weighed. And we outlined some of those things. And we also shared what were the benefits that of handing the responsibility to the electoral management body is that it centralizes all the aspects of elections within one agency with the necessary expertise and the relationship with the political parties. But the downside being that there can sometimes be conflicts of interest and the diluting of the core mandate of the, especially the constitutional mandate of that the electoral management body has, which then could actually erode or cannibalize the resources that are meant for the elections. And this is one of the risks that we actually, among many others, that we did identify. Now, honorable members, with this in mind, I think the Electoral Commission has been consistent in its position, and this is why we wanted that at least we also make this, for me, that this disclosure is made also to the MCOP members. And we, however, notwithstanding that, have actually taken a position that we stand ready to perform the responsibilities as our government or parliament requests us to do so. And to a very large extent, this is what we have done with both the committee as well as with the national treasury. One must say that we do have a constitutional duty to ensure that the core mandate of managing the elections does not get them inadvertently or unwittingly compromised by the expanded mandate. And there are a number of ways we've factored to ensure that we mitigate and minimize that, and which was what also our colleagues from Treasury pointed out, that of what you call insulating the two mandates in having two separate what you call entities or vehicles that may report to the Commission, but they remain with their autonomy as institutions within the Commission. And we are pleased that the bill in Chapter 6 does make that particular provision. And the second crucial way was to ensure that the new mandate is fully funded and that the existing budget of the Electoral Commission does not get eroded. And in that respect, one needs to point out that we reach a point that is there would be a phased funding, but the precondition was that it was in the prerogative of the Treasury that made a determination whether the ideal of fully funding upfront what is required is feasible or not. When we reach a conclusion that from Treasury it was not feasible, which is the Treasury a prerogative, we then look pragmatically what then would be the practical steps of implementing it, and hence then the approach of saying it then is going to be phased. And then the providing a strict regulatory framework for the political party funding to us would actually remain a paper tiger if we do not empower the new entity and with the resources to offer a credible oversight and enforcement role. And there again is where there is a possible risk that the Commission should not then be expected to deliver more than what it is resourced. And we've seen that this may arise in the helibelly of electoral activities, where then your challenge is taken to court when you are only funded to do a certain aspect of what is the bill. And over the period of time, then you could be held responsible or not. I think this is something also that the honourable members at least should be made aware of. matters stand is that the bill, yes, is to be proposed, it is to be implemented in a phased implementation of the legislation and aligned to, as I indicated earlier on, to the resources that the Treasury has indicated is what could be available in this in the period of the MTF. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you for having given me the opportunity just to give you this particular background and brief perspective to the evolution of the bill that is before yourselves. And with your permission, may I ask our Chief Electoral Officer then to take us through the details of the bill. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson of the Ad Hoc Committee and Chairperson of the Commission. Mindful of the elaborate submission of the Chairperson, I'll try to move very quickly. And in the discussion, I think members can clarify those aspects that require clarity. These are the issues that we thought will provide to the committee, and we'll deal with them to different degrees of detail, given what I just indicated. Well, accepting that parties require funds for all their activities, the Constitution provides in Section 236 that to enhance multi-party democracy, national legislation must provide for the funding of parties participating in national and provincial legislatures on an equitable and proportional basis. To that extent, the public funding of represented political parties act was promulgated on 1 April 1998 for that purpose. In accordance with that act, allocations to parties are done in accordance with the formula on two components. Firstly, there's a 90% equitable component and a 90% proportional component. And now there are changes that were effected this morning for which we apologize. In the current financial year, the total allocation from the RPPF is 148.7 million, of which the proportional component, in other words, the 90% component, is 133.8 million, and the equitable component just under 15 million. We've also noted that in 95, constituency allowances were introduced to give support to parliamentarians to do work in the various constituencies. So even though we have a proportional system, Parliament has decided to make this allowance for parliamentarians to maintain constituency offices. There are also provincial acts. I think Treasury did reference this fact that there are provincially based public funding legislation. And they are different in terms of their allocations. Others are 100% proportional. Others are they split 80-20, and so on. To the extent that we could discern the quantum of those provincial funds, those are indicated on the right of the slide. Now, as is now established, there is no regulation of private funding of political parties in the country. There is no legislation that compels the disclosure of names of persons or organizations that make donations, and there are no limits with respect to the amount a donor can make to a party in a year or over time. Furthermore, parties do own their own private companies, which they use as investment vehicles. And the net effect of all this is that the public is not informed about where parties get the share of their money and how they spend it. Now, this goes against what we observe as international practice. which largely regulates private income through prohibitions and the setting up of upper limits. Now, the summary of the present situation is that there is no central repository of information regarding public and private funding of political parties. There is no transparency and regulation and oversight of private funding. The current RPPF, which I spoke about, may appear to reinforce the status quo by favoring incumbent parties, especially the larger parties. There's a lingering question about the constitutionality of the provincial public funding arrangements that have been made. Because if you look at Section 236 of the Constitution, it seems to suggest that the RPPF has taken account of both national as well as provincial representation. So whether then the possibility exists constitutionally to create further provincial funds, it's a matter that is open for determination. Now, what is international best practice? There's global acknowledgement that unfettered and unregulated private funding of political parties has inherent risks. And we also know that South Africa is a signatory to the United Nations Convention Against Corruption, which, amongst others, in one of its chapters, promotes enhanced transparency in the financing of election campaigns and political parties. We are also a signatory member of the African Union, and in accordance with Article 10 of the AU Convention on Prevention and Combating of Corruption, we are obliged to adopt legislative measures to incorporate the principle of transparency into funding of political parties. Now, two-thirds of the world's countries ban foreign political donations to parties. There are also annual contribution limits in relation to the election for parties and candidates. 64% of the world's countries either ban anonymous donations or set a threshold above which the donor identity has to be disclosed. Two-thirds of the world countries also require political parties and or candidates to make reports publicly available, or commonly both private and public funding is included in those reports. Among the current common practice for imposing limits on private funding are increase in equity portion of public funding to assist smaller parties, and Mexico uses a 70-30, Ghana
30,
38, 30, 30, no, 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 no. No, thank you for the help. Yeah, I was looking for that opportunity. But some ban outrightly foreign donations like the US and the UK. Others ban on government funding for parties and candidates. In other words, other than the regulated public funding, there can't be any other public funding that goes to parties and candidates. Now, what are we able to decipher from international best practice? That we need to set election campaign maximum spend limits for parties, set annual caps or ceilings for party donations, require full transparency and disclosure from both recipients and donors, in other words, a dual reporting mechanism. Noting that many countries use public funding to also encourage the gender representativity. I mean, there's an example there of France and Portugal. Global guidelines for enhanced regulations, I'll skip because we have dealt with that. Now, let's go to the key principles that the Commission outlined through the process in the National Assembly, which principles remain relevant for the current process in the NCOP. compelling political, operational, and financial reasons for the regulation of party funding on the one hand and the management of the elections on the other hand to be distinctly separated. Therefore, there's a need to insulate the election process from the politics of party funding. And we need to ensure that the political party funding regulatory mandate does not impair the electoral operations mandate and vice versa. And as articulated by the chairperson in his opening submission, we need to ensure that the cannibalization of either budget does not occur. In other words, we should not take money meant for political parties to go print ballot paper. And we don't have to take money from buying indelible ink and give it to political parties. In terms, in operational terms, this means the need for the creation of a separate entity with a shared governance structures of the Electoral Commission to undertake political party funding mandate. And we know that this has been provided for in Chapter 6 of the bill. Now, Treasury, we've noted Treasury's submission today, and we've been working close together, and they indicated we now need to engage the MTEC process, with the net effect being that monies will be available, if approved, from 1st April 2019. In effect, I think that's when, realistically, or in terms of based on the submission, when the bill can be given life. Just to underscore the need of cannibalization, I mean, we've experienced, like all other state institutions, recurring budget cuts, and the fact that we have a constitutional court matter that has placed significant strain on our finances. We have a current operational shortfall of about 325 million. And throughout the draft, the drafting of the present version of the bill, the Commission has consistently stressed that it cannot assume an unfunded mandate. Now, what are the new skills that we will need to acquire in order to fully implement the bill? We note that our scope and mandate is being expanded by this bill beyond the present skill set and expertise. Therefore, new skills and competencies will need to be recruited in order to perform the functions contemplated in the bill. And this includes investment management and planning, investigations and matters of enforcement, party funding research and policy development, because we see this bill as something that is going to evolve with time. Therefore, there's going to be a need for constant research and so on, so that we build and improve our regulatory framework from time to time. And there are also party funding activities, especially in relation to the Multi-Party Democracy Fund, which is predicated on corporate South Africa making donations. So you need to have a marketing program to ensure that corporates are aware, corporates have been mobilized to make those donations. Now, this is the functional metrics of what we think the functional implications of the bills are. We obviously would need to have a coordinator of this functions with admin support, and there's a party funding management functional area which would include investment, management and planning, financial reporting, and financial compliance training. I think this being a new regulation framework, there's a need for the unit to give training to political parties. The treasurers of political parties needs to be briefed fully on the implications of the bill, the audit processes, and so on. Then there's a research policy and regulatory affairs to look at research and policy development, and then there's an enforcement. There's an enforcement section chapter in the bill, so we need to ensure that for those that are not compliant, enforcement measures can be undertaken. Now, if you Our envisaged costing for personnel is estimated at 11 million, and those are the bare minimum positions we think will be necessary just to kickstart the structure. The unit. Now, furthermore, there are also additional administrative expenses and assets that we need to acquire. You need offices, we need advertising, we need the ICT equipment, computers, laptops, printers, and so on, office equipment. Now, we realize that South Africa remains one of only a few countries which does not have a regulatory framework. We also recognize that transparency and regulation of party funding is an aspect, is an important aspect in those factors that contribute to free and fair elections. And we also realize that we have elections next year, and it would be a lost opportunity if some reporting system is not implemented ahead of the elections. Chairperson?
I'm sorry, I just wanted to make a suggestion because I'm looking at the time.
Yes.
And I'm sorry to disturb. Can I allocate 3 minutes, then you wrap up?
Let me go to...
We are still going to give two members to discuss the presentation, then we need to respond, and then we've got a sitting at 2 o'clock. So can I just ask you to...
I'll take half a minute now.
Please. Thank you.
That will take me to slide 27, members. And really, we conclude by saying that the final legislation will probably only be approved in the latter part of this year. And we note that the draft register provides for an overarching framework and that full implementation will require development of more regulations. And it will also require that we firm up the funding arrangements with National Treasury. Ahead of the elections next year. I think that would be the presentation, Chair.
No, thank you very much for the presentation. Can we give the IEC, both the IEC and the National Treasury, just a round of applause for the comprehensive presentation. Thank you very much for the round of applause. Honourable members, those are the two presentations. So we'll now give over to honourable members for clarity seeking questions, comments, and all of that. So I'll be noting hands, and then so that I will start with honourable Labaskarni, honourable Munakedi, honourable Damini, and then I will come to the four, and then honourable Mukwele, honourable Chabangu, honourable. So it's actually all the honourable members. So in that order, we'll start by Honourable Damini. Can I just request that we should be just mindful, let's put our issues as summarized as possible forward so that they can be clarified. I thank you. Over to you, Honourable Labaskarni.
Thank you, Chief. Thank you very much for the presentation. I want to go to page 26 of the presentation on the implications. Where you spelled out that National Treasury need to provide a minimum amount of 20 million and thereafter 38 and 39 million in subsequent years, and then point three, the limited resources during the first phase, and then to postpone the compliance and enforcement functions. And number four, that this proposed new legislation will have to be agreed to political and phased implementation must be made clear in the legislation. My question now is, And I do understand the whole background and the reasoning and all the facts on the necessity of regulating political party funding. I do not necessarily agree with all the finer nuances of it, but in principle I do. But my question now is, if we postpone compliance and the enforcement of functions, how long do we postpone it? And what would be the impact of the Act then? Because the whole idea of regulating funding for political parties is compliance, and to make sure that things are not going wrong and there's no corruption and it's open and transparent and all those things. So if we postpone compliance, and then also on page 23, 0.123, it goes on the limited annual reporting, also refers to the phased-in approach. The proposal is a limited annual reporting and disclosure by political parties of all resources and amounts of direct funding to the Electoral Commission. That's now for the first phase. Then my question is, why do we do it then now? Why don't we continue with this and go for the legislation within a realistic framework? So if the IEC says and the Treasury says that within 2 years or 3 years' time, the legislation as proposed will be able to be implemented in full. Well, is that not better? Because what we are going to do now is going to spend 20 million rand on a structure that's not going to fulfill the aim of the legislation. And I need to tell you on that, and I need to understand that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the two presentations. Yeah, I think the first one as raised is very clear. I also feel very strong that once the legislation is enacted, especially the part dealing with enforcement and compliance, it will be very important that that part is actually implemented to the fullest. I see no reason why this part can't kick in the first phase of the implementation of the legislation. I think it's very critical. I don't think it should be very difficult. The second one is with regard to the 20 million for the first year. As indicated in the concluding remarks, this legislation will only be passed for sure in the next few months, you know, a month or two or so. So the actual implementation is going to take place towards the end of the calendar year, which will be towards the end of the financial year. So the 20 million for sure is not the whole of it that will be needed. I just want to clarify that. I suppose when this figure was actually put, it was on the basis that the legislation will actually start from the beginning of the financial year. So we may not necessarily be dealing here with the full amount. For sure it will be somewhere around 10, 15. No? So I just need clarity on that. Thirdly, I just want to check as well from National Treasury and IEC as to whether are there issues that they can bust with the National Assembly, issues that were not taken full on board as the legislation was being finalized, that they feel we need to look at now, not again as Mr. NCOP. By the way, we are a separate house of parliament. We have got all the capacity, authority, whatever, right, to look at whatever you have raised, that side which has not been taken on board, you know, afresh as the NCOP. So if you could just enumerate some of those that you feel very strong that have to be looked into again. Yes, there was an issue raised about parties that are contesting for the first time I'm not very sure what the view of the IC, I don't know whether it's an IC or an treasury. I think that, yeah. Are you saying we need to consider make it possible for parties contesting elections for the first time to also get funding? And then lastly, on the issue of the provincial legislation providing funding for parties represented in the, at the provincial level. As it is, are you saying this legislation can be extended to cover that level? Because I think there was an issue raised to say that there's a question on the constitutionality or otherwise, no? Of what is happening provincially in terms of providing funding to political parties. I just want your view, your advice as to how to go about it. Are you proposing that it, that part should actually be brought in so that in terms of implementation, in terms of administration, those funding should actually come centrally so that they are administered from this fund that is being established? Thank you very much.
Many thanks to the communicate. Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman. Greetings to the two delegations and welcome the presentation. Chair, on the first presentation, it also goes for the second presentation. We are saying that IEC should manage the fund, and like the fund that we have currently we are using is managed by the IEC. Now, my question is, they are talking about an entity. Is an entity which is an IEC going to manage another entity that we are envisaging to come up with here? What is it? If we form a new entity, why talk about the IEC now? Why can't we have a standalone entity? And if it is an entity under the IEC, what status does it have? Which section does it fall? Under which section? I'm a little bit confused. I need to be clarified because I thought we agreed that we want it to be under the IEC, like the fund that we're having now, which is not enough. And in fact, we're adding to that. If it is going to be managed by the IEC, I'm looking at slide 18, page 18 of the IEC. There is a structure there. I have thought that is an organogram, but it's written on top, so this is not an organogram or structure. If it is not an organogram, what is it then? What is that thing that we see there? If you look at all these activities, they really do meet all these activities, because it also calls talk about investment. How long will the money stay in the entity in such that you'll think about investment instead of money going to political parties? At what level are political parties given money? It also talks about fundraising. There's an issue of fundraising down there. Who will be fundraising? Because what we are discouraging is that political parties go out and fundraise. And one of the fears is that we might be the issue of a state capture because you took money from us. Therefore, there's nothing for free, nothing for mahala. If we give you money, this is what, this is the expectation. If this entity is going to fundraise, are we not going to experience the same that we are afraid of right now? That's why we're saying the state must give more money. I agree with Honorable Munagedi that we have an opportunity, Honorable Chair, that those that are not part of the act now, that are not accommodated, provincial and local, let them be accommodated now, because the new bill, why do we leave them out? For when? I think this is an opportunity that we need to use to accommodate that, those that are not funded. The first presentation on page slide on policy matters. You said you still need clarity because EIEC is managed after under PFMA, but you're not sure about this entity. You still need to get clarity. What do you want us to do now? Because we are processing the bill. Should we wait for you to get clarity? Because we don't want you to get clarity after we have finalized. We must know now what are the provisions. Chair, those are the issues that I wanted to raise. Thank you.
Thank you. Memo Kwele.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not going to be that long. And thanks for the presentation for both Treasury and IEC. My question is on slide 3, background and historic context, bulletin number 2, where it speaks about equitable and proportional basis. Can you, in terms of the constitution, can you clarify us how will the bill moving forward will make sure that the funding will be in accordance with the constitution in terms of proportional representation? And again, going to page 18, that slide, can you elaborate further? Because slide number 18 speaks to slide number 19 in terms of costing of the very same positions positions that are in page 19. And Chair, in terms of National Treasury, you spoke about small parties, especially those that are contesting at the local government field. I want to check with you that do you need us to find a way to regulate how will independent and small parties that are participating in local government sphere going to be funded, or do we leave it as it is, as the bill is only concentrating on national and provincial, so that when we deal with the bill itself, we are able to cut across from national, province, and also local field. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Mukwele. Honorable Gila, also end up. Okay. Thank you. I also not going to delay. I welcome the presentation. And, this bill is overdue. The sooner we start with it, the better it is. And I believe you are saying that the 20 million is to kickstart the bill. I'm not sure whether if I'm wrong, but it's needed by South Africa, and I agree with my noble Dlamini here. We cannot continue being funded by private companies who have their own agenda. This democracy needs to be fully fledged like other countries. So I 100% agree with this here, but the clarities are what the gentleman, my colleague was saying, the entity. Is it an entity within IEC? How is the entity going to work? That's what I need. And then, of course, the fundraising, the entity going to fundraise on behalf of the political parties with private businesses. I know reading the bill, there's a limit for private companies to fund political parties. I don't know whether it's 100,000, whichever, but there is a limit there. I just cannot remember it. But then the provinces, I think the provinces must be included. We're going to have a situation where the provinces do their own thing. they should be included in this program. Thank you. Honorable Chabangu.
Chairperson, let me also acknowledge the presentation. It is also necessary to disclose the amount accumulated by parties that are allowed to have private companies which serve as investments. That is my take. Are political parties which do not comply with disclosure going to be dealt with? You have made mention of the enforcement measures, but that is not enough. I think you should elaborate. The formula that is going to be used for funding of parties that emerge, as it has alluded to by the former speaker, because it would be unfair for them. If, for instance, they are taking part in all three spheres of elections, but they don't get funding. Then on page, is it 6, all the provinces are there, excluding KwaZulu-Natal. I would like to know why, what is the reason for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chabangu. Honorable Mutha Shoping, can I? Yeah, the bell actually shocked you.
No,
can I give you a minute?
No, 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 thanks. Not yet. No. I will not use your time, Chair. I welcome the presentation for both the treasure, National Treasury and IEC. But, you know, I expected a lot, Chair, from National Treasury because there was an engagement between National Treasury and National they asked two issues that they said. I thought they would clarify them. One, for an example, that they said we need to go and examine and do all that. One is the interface between the Public Finance Management Act, the Finance for Parliament, and provincial legislatures. I thought you would elaborate more and give some sort of a guideline. As people who are technically equipped. The second issue that you alluded to was funding for the local government elections that we need to look into it and blah, blah, blah. Like my colleague said, there was also this matter discussed in the NDA. You would be briefing us about how you handled those issues when you were dealing with the NDA so that we don't waste much time here. We're not saying we're wasting time, but I'm saying through your directive, we would be able to speed up the process. It would also relate to the same question that I underlined, where you spoke about smaller parties in terms of auditing purposes. Now, my understanding, my legal understanding, and I'm standing to be corrected, is that we have to choose a model. But we have a proportional representative model in our system. And my view is that if you talk about political parties that will be formed next year, I'm not sure what will be the determination of the percentage. Because we'll be talking about political parties that are existing. Now, if we pose a question and say, if they are emerging, how are we going to handle that? Because I take it, we legislate in terms of what we have. The other question relates to, you know, National Treasure, you spoke about a structure that must be taken for evaluation, the post evaluated and blah, 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 blah. You gave us a structure. And what was alarming for me was the salary of the head of this the new structure. I'm not sure in terms of accounting. Looking at that, I may be wrong. I'm not a public servant. In terms of your salary scale, that is the CEO as proposed there the same at the same level while we have this entity going to serve within the IEC the way I understand it? And would I'm talking about the accounting. How will the head there be accounting? Because I'm taking it will be a structure under Chairperson. The other things I think Motara will ask.
Okay. No, thanks, Honorable Mutashupi. Honorable Motara, just 1 minute, then we wrap up.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Mutashupi didn't lobby me for what I must ask, but it's fine. I think the issue around the PFMA and the farm plan is an issue for us, which needs to be clarified. The issue around the structure, I think the whether it's within or adjacent to what IEC is doing, must be clarified, even in terms of reporting, because according to the bill, you will have to be responsible for reporting. Is that the entity will be responsible for reporting? Is it going to be its own reporting mechanism or within the annual report of the IEC? That needs to be clarified, I think. And then also, in terms of the accounting, it seems to me it's either from the bill or your presentation. I'm not sure where the anomaly lies. It almost seems that there's going to be two processes in terms of credit balance. There's a credit balance for political parties. There's also a credit balance within the fund. And I don't know if it's because I'm reading the bill incorrectly or what you've presented. And why will there be two processes if you are allocating funds from the central fund to parties? It should be that parties have unspent funds and credit balances, not necessarily the fund. Because the fund should be, in my understanding, should be allocating that money to parties within the prescribed time and that sort of thing, unless you are talking about perhaps when it's an election year or where elections or for instance when if parliament gets dissolved and there's that where you've not yet allocated funds to a party and parties have unspent if the bill is making provision for that. I also think in the just on the structure. On the structure, I think the structure is a bit, I don't want to use the word bloated. Maybe it's a bit expanded. Let me use the word expanded. And I also think that within the phased-in approach, what Orgo Lamskakhni is raising becomes paramount when you phase in anything, reporting and so forth, compliance. Must be at the onset. You can't introduce compliance issues later, and that becomes more critical for me. So more than an expanded structure, you may have to constrict the structure, but in the first instance, introduce compliance. Thanks, Chair.
No, thank you, Honourable Members. I think because time is not on our side, so I was going to propose to the meeting that we must request both National Treasury and IEC to give us written responses. I'm sure, but in detail, it must be placed in detail. Not just brief, I know honorable members, they normally complain and say, no, what is being responded to is not what they asked because of the lack of detail. So we'll just request and emphasize that can we get the written responses in detail, and then they will be circulated to all honorable members, to the Secretary, to escape. And then that will be covered. And then that brings us to the next item. We are supposed to deal with item 6, which is the consideration of the minutes of the 24th. So I'll also propose, that we defer the minutes to the next meeting. Yeah. So thanks for the presentation. Thanks for coming through. No, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned, Honorable Members. Thanks. Thank you.